All right, ladies, buckle up.
It's showtime. It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the 24th episode of Matinee Talk. I am one of your hosts, Johnny Lightfoot, with me as always.
Julian.
I was trying to get Julian up off the bat, but we're here bright and early, coming in from Austin, Texas today. We've got a little bit of news, main topic, Overlook Festival, but Julian, first off, what do we got at the box office?
The box office this past weekend was not terrible, but
under expectations.
Under expectations. That's the word I would use. So let's start with this past weekend was the 31st through the 2nd. So this was Godzilla's weekend with
Secret Life of Pets.
I'm
week behind.
We're off of mine. So, yeah, you're right. Secret Life of Pets with $46 million, which was his opening weekend. Which is, I think Secret Life only did like $30 million in his opening weekend. So this is a better opening weekend than what Secret Life of Pets was. Number two, which we're going to get into later, Dark Phoenix with $32 million in its opening weekend. Which, we'll leave the little news on that one in just a moment for now. Number three is going to be Aladdin in its second weekend, only $24 million. Its drop-off is about 42%, with its domestic going up to 232. That's not bad. That's really not bad. And then number four is going to be Godzilla King of Monsters with $15 million, with a 67% drop-off with its domestic up to $78 million. Huh, that's pretty... Okay, and then number five, rounding it out, is Rocketman with $13 million, with a drop-off 46%, with its domestics up to $50 million. Real quickly, before we get off of the box office, do you think it was good that Secret Life of Pets did better than Dark Phoenix? We'll get into why I feel
a moment. It really shouldn't have, but
I agree.
Considering its budget was less than half.
Yes.
Because Dark Phoenix budget was right around $200 million after all the reshoots and everything. Secret Life of Pets at $80 million. So the discrepancy there is a lot of people don't care. I mean even the average fan doesn't care. Even the people who don't know that now X-Men is going to Disney don't care.
They don't care. And we'll get into that in my rant that I have later. But yeah, that's pretty much it for the box office news. What do you got for us in terms of movie news, Johnny?
All right, so movie news. So everybody's anticipating Denny Villeneuve. Man, we're all kinds of mumbling stuff this morning. But Denny Villeneuve, he's directing the Dune movie coming out in November of next year, which is starring Timothy Chalamet, Oscar Isaac, Rebecca Ferguson, Dave Bautista, Zendaya, Josh Brolin, Javier Bardem, Jason Momoa, Stellan Skarsgård, and Charlotte Rampling. So there's bunch of talent there. Turns out they're planning for him to also direct a TV show spinning off of that, basically centered around, it's going to be called The Dune, The Sisterhood, which is going to be basically centering around the Bene Gesserit, which is like a group of women who basically through focus of body and mind gain powers, and it's kind of like a religious type of political group. And it's going to be focused on going to the Warner Brothers still unnamed streaming service. So with that, obviously with AT&T absorbing Warner Media, Time Warner and all of that, kind of plays into what you and I were talking about last week with Swamp Thing getting canceled. We don't really know what's going to happen with the DC streaming service, because now to combat like Disney Plus and all this other, Warner Brothers wants to do their own one, and it's still unknown if they're just going to absorb the DC streaming or what's going to happen with that.
And on that note, I feel like this TV series is going to be really interesting. Just hearing you talk about the synopsis of what they entail with the series sounds really good. But where my issue comes in, and we talked about this multiple episodes ago, I don't understand why we're getting so many streaming services now. I was telling this with a friend. I'm a huge gaming nerd as well. So we were talking about how now there's streaming cloud services that's going on for gaming. And I said this then. I said this in our stream, on my podcast a couple of months ago. I just feel like the competition is getting saturated. And I get why Disney would want to do something in terms of like its streaming services, because let's be honest, Disney literally owns everything. But I guess for me, for now, Warner Brothers to try to do their own streaming service, and also at the fact that they're basically saying we're killing the DC universe because we didn't think it was what we wanted it to be. We thought it was going to be this entity where everybody's going to love comics. And now because Disney has Disney Plus and they're coming out guns blazing, we definitely don't think DC Universe. I think personally they're saying we don't think DC Universe is going to do so well. So now we're going to try to merge WB in its own streaming entity. But at that notion, for me, I'm going to be honest, even though I'm a huge Warner Brothers fan, I'm still, one of the biggest things that I was lonely into was DC Universe, and I was going to buy that. Now that Warner Brothers is basically killing off the DC Universe and making their own streaming service, it's going to be another one of those, okay, I'm going to have somebody to
It really stinks, too, because DC Universe is finally starting to find its footing.
Exactly.
Because right off the bat, I was one of the people who complained about Titans, like the trailers and stuff. I was like, and then the first couple episodes, I was like, ooh, and I stuck with it, and like it ended pretty well. And then, of course, you got Young Justice season 3, which was really, really good. And we
still don't have the second half of the season, though.
Doom Patrol, I actually waited until the series completed, and then I just went in and binged it, and it is amazing. And then Swamp Thing kicked off, and through 2 episodes of that, that show is also amazing. I don't know why I shouldn't have doubted it. It's James Wan.
Yes.
And so I was like, man, DC Universe is really, like, to me, like, the comic stuff, that was always a bonus.
Right.
Because I've never been one to want to read comics on digital.
Like, I agree.
I read a few, but I was like, this doesn't make up for, like, having a comic in your hand, so it's not the same, but that was always just a bonus. But it seemed like they were finally finding their footing. And then, you know, some of their movies, they would debut on DC Universe. Not all of them. No. Obviously, like, the one that just came out, Batman versus the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, not on DC Universe.
It's still not on DC Universe?
Nope. Oh, goodness. And then, but then the last one, Justice League with the...
Justice League versus Fatal Five.
Fatal Five, that one was on there. And then the one before that wasn't, but then Reign of Superman was on there. So it's kind of weird that they're dropping every other one. So I wish they would drop all of them. But, yeah, I mean, it stinks.
It does. And that's why I'm wondering how this streaming war is going to happen. I'm kind of irritated after understanding that everybody's trying to get in their own streaming service because everybody wants the piece of the pie. And don't get me wrong, I understand where all these major studios are coming from because everybody wants their streaming services and things of that nature. But to be honest, I was not having a problem with Netflix, but I understand you don't want to pay licensing fees and all that BS. So, I mean, it is what it is. It's the nature of this now.
I mean, I do appreciate it in that back when I cut the cord, it still made sense. I do kind of feel bad for the people who are now just starting to, like, cut cable because now it's going to be, like, the same price or more than cable anyways. By the time you add up all your, like, between DirecTV Now, which I have to have mainly for, like, sports.
And HBO and Starz.
And HBO and everything. And then I have Netflix. And then you add in Hulu and then DC Universe and then... pretty soon I'm going to be adding Disney Plus. I mean, it's going to be more than a cable bill.
I was going to say, after you add it all up, it's still going to be a little bit over your cable bill. But when I thought about it, and this is just technical, I still would take that over how much I would be spending after my promotional year with Spectrum was going to end. Because, you know, you get that a whole too. Year with promotionals. Oh, yeah, you get $130, $140 with everything. And then after that year comes up, they jack the price up to say, hey, this is the promotional price for it. This is not the promotional season you had of it now. So now your price is up to almost $200 at that point.
And it does give you more control over your content.
Yes.
As opposed to having to, like, search for times and record and then come back and watch it and then fast forward through commercials and all that. So it does give you more flexibility and control over your viewing. But it's still, I can understand some people's woes.
Yeah. But on that note, did you want to talk about Mark Hamill before I do my rant?
So it came out recently. Mark Hamill was on The Late Late Show with James Corden. And one of the things he talked about was his short time in the food service industry while he was an aspiring actor in Hollywood and how he worked for Jack in the Box. And so apparently he used to always be in the back doing shakes and fries and doing all that. And what he always wanted to do was be on the mic to do drive-in. And so he finally got his chance to be on the mic. And he was wanting to find the theatrical aspects of it. And he wanted to be in character. So his he did so and was doing it in the voice he thought that Jack would sound like. And his manager did not think it was very funny and told him to go home and never come back. And he got fired for being in character. I just thought it was a little tidbit of news, but not really news, but it was funny.
It's funny because it's interesting to see how Mark Hamill goes from Jack in the Box getting fired for saying what he thought Jack would sound like to being arguably one of the best, one of the most legendary voice actors in our generation, maybe of all time. It's just very funny and interesting. And hindsight, literally in what, 10 days from now? No, not 10. Yeah, about 10 days from now, he's going to have Chucky come out and he's going to voice the titular Chucky after Randorf has done it for almost 30 years now. Almost 30 years. And so it's going to be quite interesting to see what he does. And I mean, like I said, for almost 25 plus, he's played the titular Joker in all the anime series and video games. So it's just, it's interesting to see that it's just funny that, hey, Jack in the Box fires you because you wanted to change your voice and now you're one of the best voice actors of all time. Just pretty interesting. But on that note, we're going to kind of shift gears. I'm going to tell you some news and then I'm going to rant about it. So, if you, like we talked about, Dark Phoenix only made about $36 million. Opening weekend.
33
million. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's in the franchise history, the only bona fide flop.
Yes. This is the worst opening for any X-Men franchise film. And I try to think about that Monday after I read that. I try to think about it. Was it because of the marketing? No, it did the exact same marketing as the other ones. Is it the acting? No, because you still have Fassbender, McAvoy, Jessica Chastain should have put people in seats, right? Like you have all of these great actors putting their hearts on the line in this film, and I've realized it's not any of that. It's how they handled the dumpster fire that was Dark Phoenix. To give it an example, I think they didn't even call it an X-Men movie. They just said Dark Phoenix instead of saying X-Men Dark Phoenix. This movie has been pushed back 3 times. It was pushed back to November of last year. Then it got pushed back to February of this year. Then it got pushed back to the date, which was June 21st. All of us were like, why? And then when I read into it, we talked about this in Matinee Talk months ago, that they had reshoots. 3 reshoots. 3 different types of reshoots because they did not like the ending. And here's to say, we're going to go into it real quick. This is my rant coming in. This is a spoiler review of Dark Phoenix, a very rant quick one. So if you have not seen Dark Phoenix, I want you to fast forward maybe 3 or 4 minutes when we're going to start talking about the Overlook Facebook. But if you don't care about spoilers, if you're like everybody else in America that did not care to see this movie, here we go. The biggest problem that pissed me off about this movie is to say that this is the final X-Men titular franchise for 20th Century Fox. You would expect them to go guns blazing. Absolutely not. And it's crazy to say this. X-Men The Last Stand, as much as I did not like that movie, did a better job with the Dark Phoenix saga than what they have done with Simon Kinberg's script, right? And you have a character arc, right? You had a character arc for 20 years for Charles, Magneto, and all these characters and how they're going to get to this point. And what bothered me about this entire film is, yes, Charles, what we all knew in the original trilogy in the X-Men and what's going on now, I mean, going on before Dark Phoenix is, Charles is this, like, father figure for the X-Men, but he is a, like, scarred man with his past, right? Like, how I feel like a lot of comic books and a lot of characters have done is, you know, Charles is this big father figure, and he's all-powerful, but the problem is he's had problems, or he has decisions he's made in his past that doesn't make sense, or you go back in hindsight and say, you could have done that better. And I feel like this movie tried to do that and then just threw it on the hindsight. And I don't understand why they ended it the way that it did. So, long story short, the big train sequence that you see in the trailers, that's literally the final fight of the film. Dark Phoenix, basically, Jean takes herself, sacrifices herself to stop the alien race from taking her power and using it for world domination. Sacrifices herself. Charles decides, you know what? After for 3 decades of teaching kids how to be mutants and how to harness their powers, I'm just all of a sudden, because Jean killed herself, I'm retiring, right? And I was like, okay, I would take that if you gave me some payoff on why he would do that, but you didn't give me any payoff on that. And Magneto, who in my personal opinion had the best character arc in the entire franchise besides Wolverine, had a literal same exact thing in Apocalypse. Hey, I'm evil. I mean, no, I'm a good guy trying to live in my life. Something happens, I'm going to become evil, and then by the end of the movie, I'm going to change my ways. And they did the exact same rinse and repeat for Apocalypse and Dark Phoenix, but this time, which pissed me off to my core, is Magneto is now all of a sudden trying to be a safe haven for mutants and not trying to show the world that, you know, basically that the mutants are the more superior race than the humans are. And he tries to take Charles under his wing? For what? It doesn't make any sense to his character arc. It doesn't make any sense for what Magneto was going to do or what his character was doing for the last 20 years. And the same thing with Charles. Why is he retiring? Okay, I get it that his kid died. Like, one of his star pupils has died. But that never was a reason why he would retire from the X-Men, because he knew that his greater purpose was to help kids out. And they try to make him this this sucker for attention. And they try to make Charles, instead of being this person that he was in the first two X-Men films, which was this guy who's trying to learn how to have mutants be a better place, to some star-studded fanboy that wants attention from the president? What? So, I wanted to say how I felt like this movie was such a lackluster ending for the X-Men franchise, and I'm just thankful, absolutely thankful, that it is now in the hands of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because how can you get a franchise, and this is from a fan who's been watching since the first original X-Men, how you take some characters that are beloved, that talks about some very social commentary themes, but still give me the superhero aspect of it, and turn it into this CGI, god-awful, Daredevil-esque movie that didn't make any sense, but hey, we made money. We're trying to make money off of it. It baffles me to what 20th Century Fox has done with the X-Men franchise now, and I'm just thankful that now it's with Marvel. That's my biggest thing. I was just pissed that I went to go see this movie. It's like, okay, maybe it's going to be salvageable. None of it was. Acting was bad. The story was awful. The way you end everything for a 20-year journey just did not make sense. So, yes, if you wanted to go see Dark Phoenix, by all means, I say wait until it gets on FX, when it's going to come on FX, or when it gets on Netflix for maybe 2 days. No, when it gets on Disney Plus sometime next year. Do not waste $15 to go see this movie. Do not.
Yeah, As of right now, Variety is reporting it's looking like the film will lose about $100 million.
And it should. It absolutely should. 20th Century Fox should have known better not to give us that crap that it gave us. But it is what it is. Ugh, so irritated. Woo. Sorry.
Just had to get that coming in hot.
But anyways, now we're going to get into some better news real quickly. We're going to talk about how Johnny and a couple of his friends went to go to New Orleans for the Overlook Festival. I'm going to let Johnny talk about what the Overlook Festival was, what films he watched, and then I'll ask him questions as he goes from that. But without further ado, Johnny.
So, Overlook Festival is it's a horror festival, horror film festival. It's been in New Orleans. This is now the second year it's been in New Orleans. Before that, it was in Denver. But it's basically, you know, a little short four-day festival. And just to give you some highlights, there's a lot of immersive stuff they do there, taking advantage of the city that it's, you know, in. And opening night, we saw The Dead Don't Die, which is the Jim Jarmusch film with Bill Murray and Adam Driver. And, I mean, I didn't see a bad film at this festival, but I will say this is at the bottom of my list of the films I saw.
Okay.
Which is sad because this is one of the ones that actually already has, like, wide distribution. I believe it's coming out this week or next week.
I think next week. I think the same time as Toy Story and Child's Play.
But, I mean, if anybody's seen Jim Jarmusch films, you know, it's got, like, a really dry humor. The way that he has the actors act like they're, you know, very slow burn, and it's like a, well, that just happened. Yep. And then just wait for the laugh type of deal. And then the movie all of a sudden goes very meta, which was kind of weird. And, like, Adam Driver and Bill Murray are amazing. So is Chloe Savini and Tilda Swinton also.
Okay.
Selena Gomez is in it for a hot minute, and I don't really know why.
I was going to say, did she make any purpose for the plot? Not really.
No. Right. No, she's in it, but nope.
Okay. I figured.
So, I mean, if anybody out there has seen Jim Jarmusch films and you dig that humor, cool. The meta stuff was kind of not needed, and I understand Jim Jarmusch. He likes to tell, like, somewhat political stories within his films, so it goes there. Yeah, that was that. The next film I saw was Ma, which has already been released. Octavia Spencer carries that movie. Like, without her in that, that movie would. But Blumhouse does it again. I mean, me and my buddy, after we saw it, we were like, what do you think it makes this weekend? We were like, 8 would be good, because it was made for only 6. And then it ended up making, like, 16.
Oh.
So, I mean, that Blumhouse just does what it does. It just makes money.
So let me ask this real quick, because Tate Taylor, the director, also did The Help. Can you see the relationship between them two in the film? Did they have any? I don't know if they talked about this in the interviews, but a lot of my friends who has watched Ma, I'm one of the few who hasn't watched it yet, talked about how Octavia seemed she was at her peak in terms of not peak in acting performance, but she has a different great range that only a few people can get out of her, and they love that about Octavia in this film.
Oh yeah, I mean, she has moments where she's going from, like, you know, this little average lady who works as, like, a veterinary technician, mm-hmm. so, like, the not a vet, the helper people at the vet, to this lady who, you know, all of her growing up was, like, an outcast. She never had any friends, mistreated and everything, to this crazy woman who wants to kill people in really weird, awful ways. And she has that range that she can switch between those roles really quickly. And it's really interesting, and she does it really well. I will say that once you find out the title character, Ma, what her motivation for doing this stuff is, at the end of the day, it very much so, it takes that motivation and it marginalizes it. Because what was done to her in the past was really, really awful. And this was kind of her revenge.
Okay.
And it almost makes it like a joke. And it and what happened to her as a teenager was not a joke. It was really horrible. And without going into too many spoilers.
I was going to ask if you wanted to go into spoilers.
I mean, it's been out for almost 2 weeks now. So, in general, like, if you would have made her, like, the protagonist of the film, it would have been a rape revenge.
Okay.
But just, it took her 20 years to finally do this revenge.
Okay.
And then you just made it, kind of silly in that she's going to get her revenge by getting the children of the people who wronged her drunk and, like, doing bad stuff to them.
And then
when the parents find out, the best they can do is just like, you stay away from my kid. I don't have any kids, but I've got a nephew, and I'm telling you, like, if I found out ever in like 10 years when he's older that some like 40-year-old woman was like having him come over to her house and like giving him alcohol and like doing stuff, I would be like going to the cops. No, this 40-year-old woman should not be having anything to do with 17-year-old kids.
I agree. Yeah.
And all the parents in this are just like, don't ever come around my kid again. Like, really? That's it?
Okay.
All right. So, I mean, it just kind of marginalizes. And her performance is so good. I feel like this, like, that story, if you would have taken it from, like, the roots, that rape revenge, you could have made it so much more.
Okay. That's fair. Okay. So I'm looking at that for that. All right, cool.
The next film I saw was Paradise Hills, which was a directorial debut by Alice Waddington. She's a Hispanic director, and it's got an all-star cast. So Emma Roberts, Isaac Gonzalez, Mila Jovovich, Danielle McDonald, Awkwafina. So the main, like, quad, the group, is Emma Roberts, Isaac Gonzalez, Danielle McDonald, and Awkwafina. They're like a group of four, and it's weird. It's trying to blend, and the director talked about it. She loves sci-fi, she loves fantasy, she loves fairy tales, and she tried to blend it all together.
Okay.
Where it's like, okay, this girl is troubled, so her husband, who just married her out of, like, a semi-arranged marriage, they want to send her to this, like, rehab facility to, like, get her mind right, make her stop being so crazy because she loves somebody else. But, and so it's kind of like that, oh, you got an arranged marriage, but you love somebody else, and they want to basically send her off to this place to brainwash her into loving who she's been pledged to. And then she goes there, and Isaac Gonzalez is amazing in this and gorgeous. And I hadn't seen her in anything since Baby Driver. But it's kind of this fairy tale thing. Mila Jovovich runs this facility where it's kind of this dystopian thing where they try to brainwash the people and turn, like, these bad women or women who misbehave for whatever reason, they try to, like, reform them. And, like, Isaac Gonzalez's character is, like, a huge pop star. And she wanted to start making her own music. She didn't want to do, like, the generic pop music anymore. So her agents and her manager had her committed to this place because they basically needed her to just continue making pop music and stuff. So it's a really interesting concept. It's really beautifully shot, but it's just very, it drags a lot. Drags a lot. Visually gorgeous. I would say if it comes out on streaming, Mila Jovovich is in a different movie.
So I was going to ask, how is Mila Jovovich?
She's in a different movie. I don't know what movie she thought she was in.
Okay.
Because she's like the head mistress, but she also has powers to, like, control.
So basically, plants. How she is in Resident Evil.
Yeah, but she's playing this almost like Elizabeth Banks as Rita Repulsa. Kind of like you've got this really serious, like, science fiction thing, and it goes into, and I won't spoil it, but it goes, because I don't know when this is coming out. It might not be this year. It goes into, like, basically, yeah, this whole, like, reform through, like, the science fiction fantasy, and she's playing this, like she's living in, like, the France and, like, the 1800s type of thing, and it's really weird, and I don't think she thought she was in a different movie.
That is, okay, I see what you're saying. Oh, that's weird. All right, whatever.
I also saw, let's see, Daniel Isn't Real, and this one was a tough one for me, because this one deals with, like, mental...
mental health and stuff like
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, this is this boy, and he has this imaginary friend named Daniel. And
okay.
His and basically what this all stemmed from was, as a boy, he wandered out his house, and he walked up on the scene to where this guy had just gone in with a shotgun and, like, massacred these people at a coffee shop. And he just, as a young boy, walked up as the guy was laying there dead at the front after he had just killed all these people in a coffee shop. And in his mind, that then he got this imaginary friend Daniel as a boy. And it's cool, like, they play together and everything, and everything's cool. He's got a single mother, and all of a sudden, even as a kid, Daniel starts telling him to do bad things. And the final straw that kicks it was Daniel tells him to put all of these pills in his mom's drink.
So basically kill his mom.
Yep. Okay. And then his mom ends up getting an overdose, but she survives. And at that point, his mom freaks out and basically says, Daniel isn't real. You need to, like,
chill him out.
Yeah. Chill him. And so in his mind, he locks Daniel in a dollhouse. He grows up to an adult, and he's, like, really brilliant, smart, but an outcast. He's got some mental health issues and doesn't really have many friends. And he lets Daniel out. And Daniel is, like, this cool guy and helps him, like, get girls, like, helps him do all this stuff. But then Daniel starts having him do other bad things. And then eventually he starts letting Daniel take over his body. So it's a mental health thing to where, and it has, like, a weird horror thing to where whenever the guy is in his own mind, like, he's being pulled by, like, a demon. And it's like, okay, Daniel is not just, like, a mental thing, but he's also a demon that, like, latches on to people who are not of great mind and has them do bad things. So it's really disturbing, and I wish they would have maybe tailed off a little bit on some of, like, the creature stuff with having Daniel be a demon that latches onto people with problems, and just kept it about, like, I think the story alone of a guy with mental health who, you know, has this voice in the back of his head telling him to do bad things, and like, that story alone is powerful enough, and then having it go into, like, the demon territory. The
spiritual aspect of it, yeah.
And, I mean, either way, like, the gore was really solid. I thought it was really well done. But at the end of the day, like, I just, I wish they would have tailed off from some of the demon stuff and just kept it focused on, like, because, and it's got Arnold Schwarzenegger's son.
Oh, okay.
Plays Daniel, the demon.
Okay.
But either way, and I didn't care for the lead, but I thought Patrick Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
I thought he was really, really good.
Hmm. Okay. I'm going to have to, well, if it ever comes on streaming, I'll have to watch that. Okay.
The best film of the festival, which I saw after that, was One Cut of the Dead, which I've had opportunities to see at Fantastic Fest last year. I didn't get around to
it. Yeah, because you said that was one of your movies you wanted to watch,
yeah, but
you
didn't. And then I got invited to the Top Brass screening, which they showed One Cut of the Dead earlier this year, and I didn't get to go. So I was really thrilled that they played it at this festival. It was actually my favorite film of the festival.
Okay.
So, horror comedy. Apparently, Shudder has now picked it up, so it will, because it's already out on like Blu-ray in like Europe and Asia. But it was filmed for only $30,000. Yeah. And it has made, I want to say, close to $50 million now.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, the premise is really, really cool. So, it's all in one shot. And it's, there's a director filming a low-budget zombie film. And while they're in the middle of filming that, an actual zombie apocalypse happens. And as opposed to, like, shutting it down and trying to, like, survive, the director, because he's under a lot of pressure, decides, I'm going to use this to my advantage and help motivate my actors to perform better. So I'm going to shoot them while
the apocalypse is happening.
Wow. So anytime the zombies are showing up, he actually like forces the zombies into the frame, like pushes them into the actors and is like, action. And it's like, you know, get away from the zombie. So it's hilarious, and I highly, highly, highly recommend it to anybody. Then I saw The Lodge, which a lot of people are excited for. It's from the same directors as Goodnight Mommy.
Right. So does that have a release date?
I believe it comes out sometime this summer.
Okay. I didn't remember if it did or not, because I wanted to watch The Lodge.
But stars Riley Coe as basically a new mom who, well, she was the side chick for this guy, and he's got two kids. One of the kids is the kid who played Bill in It. He's one of the kids. Yeah. And so basically the biological mom commits suicide because, her husband left her for this woman who's like 20 years younger than her. And then, so it's about them going to this lodge and she's got to take care of the kids for this weekend while the guy goes back and does work. And it's almost like Hereditary.
With some of this, it feels like a supernatural.
There's like supernatural, but also psychological. So there's times where you can't tell if something supernatural is happening or if it's just, she's batshit crazy. Or are the kids doing some sort of witchcraft? Is it the mom's like spirit coming back? Like, what is going on? There's so many like I don't know type moments, and it all takes place in this cabin in the freezing cold with no power, and it definitely, and in the theater it was freezing cold. Which, New Orleans, I definitely get it. Man, your theaters, they pump. Like, most people know when you go in a movie theater, usually the AC's pumping. New Orleans, whew, they crank up the AC up times 10. Oh. Because, and I get it, it is soggy and hot in New Orleans. And so it, that atmosphere, like, you walked out of the theater and you're like, you just felt cold. Like, it just... kind of like Hereditary, everybody walked out of the theater just quiet. Same thing, like when people walked out of the lodge, it was just quiet and like somber.
So, all right, I was going to ask this question. To your questions that you were throwing before when you were saying the synopsis of it, when I was watching the trailer, I guess that was my next question, was, is this really reality or is this demon spirit with her? Is this like the kids messing with her? And I guess my question to you, not trying to spoil anything, are any of those questions answered by the end of the film?
Yeah, all of them.
Okay.
Right, no, cool. It's not one of those that leaves you, like, wondering. No, it definitely answers them.
Okay.
The movie takes its time getting there just to keep you guessing.
Of course.
The movie also does play, kind of like Hereditary, plays around with the whole the dollhouse type thing.
Okay.
So there's a dollhouse that shows certain things as they're happening, and then it'll kind of zoom in and be in the real world. But I definitely feel like this film, you know, it's best watched at night. Just, you don't have anything going on around you. Like, it's just like, it's one of those films that like afterwards, nobody even really wanted to talk about it because it's just like so like, whew, shit.
So I guess my thing is this, where do you have it ranked in all the movies you watch in Overlook?
I think I have it at fourth.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Fourth. All right. Fourth out of 10.
That's not bad. Okay.
No, and I mean, I still gave it 3 stars.
Okay.
Then right after that, the late night movie for Saturday was Bliss, which is directed by Joe Bagos. And I love his films. He did Almost Human and The Mind's Eye, which both of those were at Fantastic Fest in years past. Bliss is, and I love the lead actress, Dora Madison. She's absolutely magnetic in this film. She's actually from Hutto, Texas. She was in the Friday Night Lights TV show. She was in the later
I'm about seasons. To say, she wasn't in recurring throughout the entire series.
She was the one who, she came around after What's-Her-Name left, and she kept hanging around Riggins.
Okay.
Always with the curly with hair.
Oh, okay. All right. I know who you're talking about now.
Yeah, she is gorgeous, and she is absolutely magnetic in this movie.
Okay.
And she's definitely the lead, but it's basically this artist in LA, and it was all shot on 16 millimeter.
Oh, okay.
And it is basically I don't even have any words to describe it. It is like it is 100% a trip, because this film, he talked about it, how he originally wrote it to be able to shoot it for 20 grand. And then financiers came back and were like, yeah, we got 200 grand. So he actually wrote the script up to bring in that money. And then, of course, shooting on 16 millimeter already was a big cost.
It's a cost anyway in itself.
Yeah. And then so it's this artist, and you can check out the trailers. The trailer is batshit crazy. This artist who's struggling to get this piece done because she's already taken advance on it. She's basically in an artistic slump. She goes to these people and takes this new strain of coke called Bliss. Or, no, it's not even called... Well, it's a type of Bliss, but I don't remember the name of it. But basically, they refer to it as Bliss. And it basically... She starts doing it way more than she should. Like, it's more than just like a, hey, every now and then. Because it's giving her, like, artistic drive. So when she gets, like, high on it, she starts being able to, like, work on her art. But what it's also slowly doing is giving her urges to eat people. Hmm. So, yeah, it's slowly turning her into, like, a vampire-type creature.
Why am I blanking? What's the name of that film that came out about 2 or 3 years ago? Where the girl goes on a camp and basically it's like a cannibalism camp. Why am I blanking? But it's a foreign film. I want to say, is it French or something of that word? I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but she's about 16, 17. She has issues at home. She gets sent off into a camp.
Oh, Raw?
There you go.
That was my favorite film of 2017.
It was a really great
Fantastic Fest.
Well, crazy enough, long story short, backtracking, reason why I'm saying it, because it sounds like that. 2016, I was working as an acquisition guy for Focus Features, and I watched the first 15 minutes of it, and I was hooked from the beginning, but that's all I had. And so when it came out in 2017, I was telling people that, you know, it was something that Focus really wanted, but it was too surreal. And then when I watched it, I was like, oh, that's why. And so it sounds like that in a sense, but instead of it being a camp, it's just her drugs are making her
quote
unquote, like a vampire. But
yeah, at Raw, it was a university for veterinarians.
Right.
And then the part of the like hazing was they made them eat pieces of raw rabbit.
Right.
And it makes them start craving, or it makes her, because of her genetics, because her mother also, like her mother, her sister, and her all have this gene because they're some kind of creature.
Yeah.
Where once they get, that's why they were vegetarians growing up, is to keep them from wanting to eat meat. this one, it definitely is more in like the line of like vampire, straight so vampire.
That's what I was saying. I'm not saying it's the exact plot of Raw, but it's, to me, it sounds like it's taking some similar points mm-hmm. from it. And that's what I mean by that. But it does sound interesting. And what I was going to ask is, did that get picked up by anybody?
I believe, actually, I don't remember who, but I'm definitely sure it got picked up. I don't know by who.
Okay.
But that one, and it's a cool, like, it's very 80s stylized. Like,
okay.
It's, and it moves at breakneck pace, too. So, it, like, literally, it's, like, 79 minutes.
I was going to ask the and
it
time.
Just,
okay.
It just moves, and it is, and... Like I said, Dora Madison is amazing in it, and you can't take your eyes off her when she's on screen because her performance as the lead is phenomenal.
Okay.
Then lastly, which was actually, it almost would have been, if not for One Cut of the Dead, this would have been my favorite film of the festival, called The Vast of Night. And this film, like, came out of nowhere. Like, I saw the trailer going into the festival. Like, it wasn't one that was on my list to go watch. But I was going through on movies that were at the festival, seeing which ones had trailers. And then I saw this one, and I was like, wow, this is the best done trailer of any film I've seen. And then so I told my buddy going in, I was like, hey, we might need to see this. Like, the trailer's really, really good. And he was like, oh, okay. And we just kept it on the back burner. And then they announced the awards, which they do the day before the last day. So they announced the jury awards, and it won, like, best picture of the festival,
jury award. Grand Jury Award, yeah.
And then it was playing the following morning, and I was like, that's the one I was talking about. Like, that's the one that has the really badass trailer. And so we were like, okay, tomorrow morning, we got to see that. And so we went and saw it, and it's a great film. It's a very Twilight Zone-esque, and it's better than anything similar genre that I've seen in recent years. It's really small, but it takes place in the 50s. It involves the radio, and it's really eerie. But it's not a film that, you know, I would say it's a film that anybody could watch that's like age 10 and up. So it's okay. Not, you know, there's no gore, there's nothing horrific in it. It's just really creepy. And basically there's a guy who works at the radio station, a teenager, and then there's another teenager, his friend. She works as a phone board operator at night, and the whole town, this small town in New Mexico, is going to be at the high school basketball game this night. And so they're like two of the only people who aren't there at the game, obviously, because he's got to work the radio and she's got to do the phones. And then this sound comes over on the phones when she's trying to operate it. So she calls him at the radio station and patches that sound through, and he plays it on the radio asking if anybody out there listening has ever heard this sound before, and takes callers who have heard this sound, and he gets a few callers who, one in particular, talks about how he, you know, worked for the military. And obviously you think New Mexico military, you think Area 51, you think all that type of stuff. And it definitely goes into that in like a creepy sort of thing where, like, yeah, the government made us like hush it, and they made sure like all of us who worked on it were, you know, like low-class minorities and all this, so nobody would believe us. And basically it's these two teenagers trying to expose all this stuff over the course of this night while these signals are coming in, and you have certain people telling them, like, you need to stop because you're potentially bringing them here. And the last time this happened, like, a whole town got taken and all this stuff. But it's really, really well shot, well done.
No, I'm not going to ask that question because I don't want it spoiled for me. You said it was filmed in Texas. No,
yeah,
Texas.
It was filmed in Whitney, Texas.
Whitney, Texas, that's right. Okay. And I guess my question would be, because I don't want to know anything about it besides what you told me at Best Buy and now again. Of course, I want to know, because the way you keep talking about it, it just seems like it was arguably one of the best films that you saw at Overlook. Has it been picked up by anybody, and does it have any like way of being streamed,
no,
or released or anything like that?
Nope. Okay. But I guarantee it will.
Okay.
Because that, like, honestly, after I watch it again, I'll probably look back and say this was the best.
Okay.
I think One Cut was just so much fun.
Like, 'cause it was a fun comedy zombie film. Yeah.
But I think going back, I'll look at it and once I rewatch both of them, I'll say The Vast of Night is a superior movie.
Okay.
I mean, if you, the trailer's on YouTube, if anybody go check out The Vast of Night trailer, it's one shot. And it starts at the girl at the phone operating table, and then it's one shot of the camera going through the town, and it is and that's all the trailer is. But that was enough for me when I saw that to be like, this is special.
Okay. So I guess I'm gonna have to sit there and watch. Whoever picks it up, I'm gonna have to wait and see it. And so I was going to say, I guess for me, One Cut, Vast of the Night were your two highlights for Overlook.
Oh, and funny thing, The Vast of Night, and I didn't know who she was, but apparently she's like a big, the main actress in The Vast of Night, because apparently she was in, like, I don't know if it was Disney or Nickelodeon shows, Sierra McCormick.
Oh, what was she in?
But like the whole festival, I was chatting with her about like horror movies. I didn't know she was like an actress.
Yeah, she used to be. The thing is, if I remember correctly, she used to be in like some Disney shows and some Hallmark movies, if I remember correctly, because that name sounds very familiar.
Yeah, like one time I was just chatting.
She was at Ant Farm. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, okay. I just looked it up. She was in Ant Farm.
And it wasn't until the last day I was like, oh, that's the same chick.
Yeah, I was like, wow, yeah. So I know who. I was like, Sierra McCormick. I know that name from somewhere because my cousins used to watch Ant Farm religiously. So okay, and what? Let me ask this: like, I feel about all the Disney actors and actresses who come out of Disney and try to be in there. How did you feel about her performance?
Good. I mean, I didn't know who she was. like I said, I saw that the movie the last day of the festival. So, like, I think it was. Saturday.
Sunday. Yeah, Saturday, Sunday.
Saturday. Well, I saw the movie on Sunday, but Saturday, Friday or Saturday, I literally just, she was just a redhead chick in a t-shirt, and I just asked, like, what was your, you know, how are you liking the festival, da da da. I didn't know who she was.
Okay. All right.
Also chatted with, the people who run Nightmare on Film Street, which I didn't know who they were, and then I was like, oh shit, they got like 20,000 followers and all this stuff.
Wow.
From all the way from Canada.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I chatted with them for a little while. Shout out to them, because last year apparently was their first Fantastic Fest, so hopefully I can meet up with them again this Fantastic Fest
when they
come back to Austin.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. All right. So overall, you enjoyed the film festival. Overall, you.
The one thing I'll say, New Orleans, man, they move at their own speed.
Yes.
They move so slow.
You didn't know that?
They move so slow. Because we'd be like, okay, we got an hour and 15 minutes until the next film. Like, let's go grab something to eat, something to drink, and then go in there. Like, order, and they're just like, and we're like, okay, can we get the check? Yeah, honey.
Yeah, they take their time. I was gonna tell you, the thing is, I love that about New Orleans. Most people, well, like I tell Johnny, my family's from Louisiana, so literally going to Opelousas, Lafayette in New Orleans was basically my home bringing, and I told him he had to bring me some food back, but unfortunately he didn't bring any. But besides the point, at least you enjoyed New Orleans
stuff. Oh, yeah. Good food. And the other thing, they had, because I was talking about the immersive experiences.
Yes.
So they had one, the best one there was called Fire Escape. And it's like an hour and a half long immersive, like VR game. So you go, you sit in a chair, and you're basically this guy who is standing out on his patio outside his apartment across the street from this other apartment building in what looks like New York or something. And basically you're almost like a peeping Tom because you can see everybody in their apartment and what they're doing. Then if you zoom in with your phone, you can hear what they're saying
and stuff like that. Okay.
And then it turns into a murder mystery to where like all of the tenants go up to like the landlord and then the power goes out and then they all come out. And then when the power comes back on, the landlord is up in the thing and he's dead. Okay. And then the cops come and you're just witnessing the whole thing and you're looking around and then in your hand, you've got the controller, which is your cell phone. And the whole time you're just like looking and then you pick what room you want to like zoom in and like listen, and the sound design's really cool and the whole thing's a murder mystery type deal, and it was really well done. The other one that was really, really good was Campfire Creepers, which was done by Alexander Aja.
Okay.
Who did the Hills Have Eyes remake, High Tension, Mirrors with Kiefer Sutherland. But that one is almost done in an Are You Afraid of the Dark, like Nickelodeon thing, where you're at a campfire with a bunch of kids, and it's obviously the 90s, and you're all sitting around the fire and telling stories. And then a boy starts telling the story about the Midnight March, which is a werewolf story. And as he's telling it, you, like, transform from being at the campfire to being in the story and, like, watching the story happen as he's telling it. And it's really well done, really creepy. It's like if you like that, I feel like that is where people should be going with VR instead of games. Like I prefer storytelling through VR to put you in the movie.
I agree with you. I agree, but then also I do like some of the video game aspects of VR. When it's done right, real quick tangent because I know we're going a little bit over, but real quick tangent. I like some of the games, specifically on Oculus, where it's more immersive, like rock climbing and things of that nature. But I agree with you. I think where VR needs to go and where VR is going to need to take its place is in stories, more importantly, horror films. Like you said about, you know, you being almost a peeping Tom aspect and the campfire story. Like I told you when you told me the story last week, one of my favorite VR things that I have seen only on VR was these two things. One was the fact that you were basically a xenomorph in Alien Covenant, and you saw it burst out of this dude's chest and attack the girl in Alien Covenant. My other one was the fact that I was in Jungle Book and I was Mowgli. And I keep forgetting Scarlett Johansson's character's name.
Ka?
Yeah. And you're sitting there and you're watching her come around you and try to hypnotize you so she can take you and eat you, right? And I think those are the most interesting aspects of VR.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see more, like you said, I want to see more horror
aspects of the stories. Yeah, I wish more directors like Alexander Aja, who has a horror movie coming out this month, Crawl.
Oh, yeah, he is doing
Crawl. Would do some of that stuff. Because it was only, like, 10 minutes.
Okay.
But, like, it was a fun 10 minutes. Like, if they would put stuff like that available to, like, watch at home, I think it would be really fun. Or, you know, like, Black Mirror type stuff.
But, I mean, I guess my issue comes in with that, again, going off on real quick tension, is, I guess, why don't we see these in these VR systems? Like, the Oculus Rift, I could see this being a huge platform for the Oculus. If PlayStation decided they wanted to open up its doors to that, it could be on the PlayStation. So my thing is what equipment did y'all use for the VR headsets? And did they talk about ever
like giving it to the public? For the one interactive one, which was Wolves in the Walls, which is based on a Neil Gaiman story, very similar to Coraline.
Okay.
That one we used an Oculus, because that one I actually, like, you had hands and you had to, like, grab stuff. Campfire Creepers, it was on a phone in, like, you know, those, like, little, like, yeah, cheap the little headsets cheap
where you put a little phone in your goggles and then you just put your phone...
Like, literally, it was just, like, put the phone in and they press play. And then you're in it.
And that's what I'm saying. If it's like that, why isn't it...
the cool thing is, because they know that, like, VR, you can only get certain resolution, that's what made it cool, that they just made it look like you were in the 90s.
See, that's what I mean. Like, that would be so cool. I would love,
like, because he's done a couple of them. This is just the first one I've seen. Like, they need to release it. I would go buy one of those cheap headsets just to be able to just put my phone in it and watch. Like, if they put these out, all of the camp, because this one was just called Midnight March, but it's a series, Campfire Creepers. Like, if they put them out to where I could just download them and just put him, I would do that, and I would show as many people as I could, because they're really, really cool.
And that's what I'm saying. Why? I wish they would be more accessible to the public, because hearing about stuff like that is something I really would love to know about, or really would love to just
dive in. Yeah, and I get it. Like, you want to make it exclusive. Like, oh, yeah, it's only for people who go to the fest. And it wasn't even for all, like, you had to have an all-access pass to be able to do it. Okay. So even the people who just had film passes couldn't go do it. But, yeah, I mean, cool, make it exclusive for this. But then when people like myself come out of the festival, make it accessible to where, like, when I go tell people, like, this is really, really cool, that they can go actually do it.
Right. That's a gripe.
Because I guarantee you, if you put out, like, 10 episodes of the Campfire Creepers... that's well worth buying a whatever $20, $30 headset.
I was going to say $20, $30 headset, $4 or $5 for each one, and there's your pop. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's what I mean. This aspect of VR could be not untapped, but could be open, and literally the floodgates could come in, right? Because I feel like VR has the potential, but it hasn't jumped that leap yet, and I feel like doing stories like that, because I'm tired of watching these stupid stories on Facebook. And that's how I watched both Alien Covenant 1 and the Jungle Book 1 was through Facebook. They're cool, but I would love to see it on a VR goggles with my
smile on. After I did the Wolves in the Walls one, which is like 20 minutes, and, you know, you're in Oculus and you have to stand there and you're in your little box and everything. Afterwards, I was like, that's not how I like doing VR, to be honest. Like, I liked the Campfire Creepers where I just sat there. And I was in a story.
And you'd just be able to see all the aspects of it, the whole 360 of it.
And then, like, and the sound design was really good. You know, having the headphones on and, like, hearing the werewolf back here and then hearing him, like, run around over here and then, like, look and see. You know, that aspect's really cool. I don't want to have to, like with the Wolves in the Walls, like, move a jar over here. Like, okay, cool.
Right. And that's what I mean by I don't know. I wish I would have went. Well, I couldn't go, but I wish VR would get to that point. That's just some tangent I have. That's a little rant I have. But other than that, yeah. But overall, would you go again to Overlook?
Oh yeah. Okay. I mean, the pass wasn't even that much. It was like $300 some.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
And then we got a hotel there near the French Quarter, so we just walked everywhere. Got a lot of walking in. And, I mean, a lot of good food. And, I mean, it was a really good time, a little mini vacation. And I would totally do it again. Is it better than Fantastic Fest? No, not even. But it definitely made me appreciate Fantastic Fest even more, because Fantastic Fest is really special. And the fact that I live here in Austin for Fantastic Fest, because I realize how many people that come have to pay so much money, like people who come from travel. Europe, Australia, Alaska, like there's a bunch of people who come from around the world for Fantastic Fest, whereas Overlook's a little more regional.
And so okay, so with that being said, I guess we're gonna look into that, but I guess we're gonna end it there. We're gonna That's wrap it up there. All right, cool. But before we go head out, Johnny, where can the kids find you?
You can find me at Johnny the Wonder on Instagram and Twitter.
And you can find me at Julian V. Owens on Instagram and Twitter. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Can we I want to talk about it. Can we please talk about Child's Play?
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to come back. We're going to talk about Child's Play because I want to... What I'm going to do is I'm going to rewatch the original Child's Play, and then we're going to get in and talk about the aspect of this new Child's Play, see what we liked, what we don't like, and go from there. But without further ado, guys, thank you for joining us, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Later.